A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They almost don't need to call it limited edition Aston Martin. They just sell as many as they can, which is probably less than 300 anyway.
My decision on his car was a 205 CTI Roland Garros.
One did this, hit the other one, whacked into the A-pillar, punctured the A-pillar, ripped the trim off it, and then the wiper decided, with the metal, but decided to sort of eject itself over the top of the car. Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 57. I've spent 2 days in a loft inhaling that lovely glass wool stuff, so I sound even worse than usual. First of all, this week, what have we done in cars this week? Neil Clifford, you have the busiest car life of us all. Endless stories. Regale us with one of them.
I've got two.
Go on.
I went to the Haynes Motor Museum.
Oh, lovely. Ooh.
Has anyone ever been there? Have we been there? It's amazing.
Yeah. Every time I drive past it, I think I must go in there.
Yeah. It's really good. I went for a little jaunt with my mates, just driving basically around Somerset. We went for a lovely cooked breakfast down there, and we went to Bruton, which is all very posh now, and £5 for an orange, but lovely. And then we went to the Haynes Motor Museum. What a dude that guy was. The red room, full of 50 red cars, including a right-hand drive original unrestored Cobra from 1964. Ooh. Amazing. So that was really good. I'd highly recommend it. And I'm sure we were talking about the Haynes manual later.
Yes.
And what I also did yesterday, no, day before yesterday, was a good friend called Luke Gilbertson, who, amongst other things, runs an Instagram called Make Green Great Again, did a lovely little party at the Bowl Caffeine and Machine up near Bedford. And I went there, and basically 100 green cars in a car park. What can't be better than that? I mean,
nothing.
What can be better than that? Coffee and green cars. And there was a guy with a 996 Tiptronic roof, or whatever they're called, that he sent it to roof, like literally 80 grand, put the roof engine, the seats, everything, had the car from new in a lovely sort of goldy silver, that special gold, which I don't know what it's called, and has done 145,000 miles in a Tiptronic roof from new. What a cool car. I'll put it on the thing.
Good.
Yeah. Why was he allowed there? That doesn't sound very green to me.
Well, because he was in the non-green element of the car park at the back. But I think he was invited just because he was a seriously cool dude.
Yeah.
But yes, you're dead right. He did have a green, he'd done all of the dashboard, everything that could be painted green.
Oh, he did. Wow. Oh, so inside was done green.
Inside was a bit green. I'll send some pictures. But anyway, as always, a fun week of silly car shit.
So no breakdowns, no failures to start.
I've had a roof that won't close.
On what?
On
a Bentley Continental Supersport.
Wow.
I had to drive it in this morning at 5 a.m. with the roof open. So
you'd do that anyway, though, wouldn't you?
But anyway, it was bloody lovely. 5 a.m. The sun's just coming up now, isn't it? 5:30. It's
nice couple of days.
It's a lovely, lovely bloody feeling.
It's unusual on one of those, isn't it? They're normally bulletproof, those things.
I know. Maybe it's been shot with a bullet.
No. It will recover, will be positive.
It will. It'll be fine, yeah.
Well, because of the unique way in which this podcast is funded, there is a seamless link I'm going to establish between Bruton, where Neil had a lovely weekend, and Braemar. It's not quite alliterative, but that's not the link. Bruton became Bruton because of the efforts of Hauser and Wirth.
Yes, exactly.
And you'll know this, and yeah, most of you know this. They are swanky art dealers from Switzerland. I buy all my stuff there. And they had bought and renovated a lovely lodge, hunting, shooting lodge in Braemar called the Five Farms. Neil's been there.
Mm-hmm.
Not the place to go if stuffed animals, taxidermy, and general wildlife death isn't your bag. Lots of sort of stag stuffed and everything around the place. Beautiful work. The reason I raise it, because in the Five Farms, there was a stunning whiskey bar. And there were three chaps running it. And I went in there and I said, they were talking about cars. And I said, I don't know, I want to know more about whiskey. And I said, the kind of question that is always a bit of a cliche is, what's the world's best car? And I was going to say, could you answer what's the world's best whiskey? But before I got there, he said, Toyota GR Yaris is the world's best. I thought, well, that's a really interesting answer. Why do you think it is? So he starts showing me loads of different whiskeys. So the first instructional element of my weekend was, what is the Toyota GR Yaris of the whiskey world?
Mm.
I hear you ask. It's that.
Oh.
What's that? Bananarama.
Bunnahabhain. Bunnahabhain. It's not expensively priced. It is. I said, well, how do you describe it before I taste it? He said, it's Jaffa cakes in a bottle.
Oh,
it was just absolutely lovely. So we had a really interesting discussion about why peaty, because I know you're a big Lagavulin fan, Monkey.
Not always. It's on my list, though.
Well, interesting. We talked about it, and I said, why is that so peaty? And we talked about the active ingredient in peat, which is used to cook the barley, and non-peaty tasting scotches use a different, either coal or something else, which is why I don't know. Lagavulin, the peat they use for that is 50 parts per million of the active ingredient. Is it fennel or something like that? He then showed me a bottle and let me smell a bottle, which was 250 parts per million of the peat stuff. It was like sticking head in bonfire. So that was the first part of my lovely car weekend, talking about whiskey. Nice. The main thing was we hired a five-year-old enterprise car rental. I had a five-year-old BMW 218, three-cylinder, 1.5 engine. And we just drove around the Highlands. It was just lovely. Lynn and I were together. And I adopted a completely different approach to driving. I enjoyed the scenery. I enjoyed lovely car, nice steering, that fantastic BMW seating position, you know, where you crank it down on the lever. And then there's that lever at the front, which then tips the whole thing up. So that feeling when you find that lever at the front. So we drove around the Highlands in this 218. It was just lovely. We went all the way up to the Lynn of Dee, for those who know, further up the River Dee. Went to Glenshee on Sunday morning. Then we went up the Lecht to Tom and Tull, where I used to go as a kid. Just stunning weather. We were lucky with the weather. And it just told me that you don't have to have all the power in the world. It's got about 130 horsepower, this 218.
Mm.
But it was nice to drive. We didn't feel in a hurry. So my weekend in cars was tasting a lot of lovely Scotch whiskey, enjoying a 218. The last part of it was on the way back to Aberdeen Airport, we passed a very small service station, probably a very old Ford dealer in the day. And they had a tiny little showroom. And on the way out, I'd noticed it because in the window, there looked like there was one of those.
129, yeah.
129. It looked like it had, from a distance, the colour-coded bumpers, pre-facelift, early 129. So on the way back on Sunday, I thought, I'll stop And it's got one of those very old-fashioned price things in the window where you have all the plastic numbers and the plastic things, all a bit rattly. It's all a bit Swiss Tony. And it said £9,000. You can't see it. It says £9,000. I thought it's probably 320, something like that. Then I took another shot, and I noticed that on the side.
Ah. Oh.
It's an SL600. So I thought, a £9,000 SL600. So I Googled it when I got home. And the service station says nothing about what it's selling. But I did see on Google Maps, there was a picture of this car in the pictures in Google Maps from about a year ago when it was 13 and a half. So if you are the proprietor of the Aboyne service station with your wonderful Gulf Endurance fuels on sale, do get in touch and tell us a story if your SL600, which has been on sale for a year.
How many miles on it?
I don't know. I couldn't get it. It was all locked.
So that wouldn't make for pretty reading on the Auto Trader price tracker, would it?
No, it wouldn't, would it? So I had a lovely weekend in cars.
Lovely.
Nice. Scotland's lovely.
We couldn't get more middle class if we tried, could we? This is fantastic. Edward Lovett, what have you done?
Well, talking about the Auto Trader price tracker, we were trying to value yesterday a new model Vantage V12, which for some reason they decided to make a limited edition thing, probably so they could put their little Aston Martin tax on the top. I think they were £320,000?
Yeah.
When I was lucky, when they launched that car and it was limited edition, probably goes down to this percentage rule of how many combustion engines and all that sort of. Chris, you'd probably know more about that.
Yeah.
But it just didn't make any sense why that would be. They almost don't need to call it limited edition Aston Martin. They just sell as many as they can, which is probably less than 300 anyway.
I think they're both the same thing, limited edition, sell as many as they can.
But what's interesting about that car is today, so there's a dealer in the UK looking at Auto Trader price tracker that their car is coming up to its birthday on the 26th. It's been in stock for 12 months. It's been reduced £130,000 from its original asking price a year ago. They're now asking, I think, £219,950. I think it's still about 50 grand too much money.
Wow. Wow.
That's painful, isn't it?
That is. Thanks, Lawrence.
Yeah. I was building
bridges with them as well. I've had some good to and fro's with Aston the last week, but that's completely shafted it.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be because it's still a great car, but there are certain cars that need to be priced in a certain way. And it sort of discredits the car if they get carried away. The right customer has to buy the right car for the right reason, and price has a lot to do with it. You can't just stick a huge price on it because all of a sudden you're trying to attract a wholly different customer, which is the wrong customer.
These are wise words. They are wise words.
What did you do this week with cars?
Well, not much really. My wife went away for the weekend, so she took the family car. So we took I had the kids. So we just played around in London in the i3. Going from park to park and restaurant to restaurant and that sort of stuff, the sort of stuff I do in London over the weekend. Apart from, we decided to go for some Peking duck on Saturday.
On the corner of Hyde Park?
Right, on the corner of Hyde Park, yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And rather than driving, I thought we'd take the tube. So I got obviously Hyde Park, I have to change from the District line to the Piccadilly line. So I thought, I'll really piss my children off and I'll get off at Sloane Square.
What without them?
I'll be a car spotter and I'll walk through Belgravia.
Nice.
And the thing I really like about Belgravia is there's some real old school car fans there. And they choose wisely. Mm. There was multiple Mercedes S-Class coupes. There were Continental Ts parked in Muses. And then even the most ordinary of cars, something like a Porsche Cayenne, when you walk up to it, it's not It's not a KNS. It's a Turbo S.
Yeah.
And then you look at the wheels, and they didn't have the standard steel brakes. They wanted the massive six-pot ceramics. And then there are phantoms street parked with... I thought it was brilliant. My son was on my shoulders. He'd given up walking by this stage. Just name it. What's that Porsche, Daddy? What's that Porsche, Daddy? Which one's that one, Daddy?
That's the best weekend.
It is good car spotting through there.
Great car spotting, because it's not obvious, all of it. There's always you'll see a little E30 325i cab, probably a billionaire. There's always something cool. Manish, what have you done with the cars?
Well, we are going on a recce to Rome and Bologna this weekend for the Luca film. And it's been a week of quite intense research. And the big research, and perhaps the listeners and viewers can have a think about this, we're trying to sum up Luca's career in road Ferraris. How would you find about half a dozen, perhaps a couple more cars that sum up his brief jaunt in 1973 to 76, and then his cars that he is responsible for, not the first stint, obviously, but in the second stint from the end of 91 to when he leaves in 2014. Can you sum that up in 6 to 8 Ferraris? And
yeah, that's definitely.
In the week. It's been so enjoyable.
Good fun.
Mm. Vetresina. Mm. What year was a Vetresina?
Totally wrong.
No, but what, in his first stint?
Yeah, but he wasn't road car.
In his first stint, he had nothing at all to do with...
You've got to start with a pre-facelift 348, so you can't change gear. You've got to see him swearing as the second gear synchro snags again.
Yeah.
Then you've probably got to go straight to a 355.
Good.
That was the one that fixed it. Then I'd probably go... I'd leap forward a bit then. I might even go... 458, because I think 458 Speciale Aperta. I'd need one in between that, wouldn't you?
You might need a 456.
They were kind of built They were built when he arrived, really.
The 456 was already done, really, wasn't it?
It's important, though, for somebody.
360 was his first car, really. His
355 was his first car.
Well, it was an adaptation of the 348, though, so it was a cheap first car. 360 was his all-new car.
Okay, take that. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll ruminate on that during this podcast. Yeah. We won't get stumbling now.
And you must put a V12 in there as well.
As an FF, it's got to have an FF in there.
Oh, absolutely. Right, here we go. I've lost control of the floor already. I've lost control of the floor.
Just one little thing. I was talking to Chris and Neil about it before. So we're planning to shoot some cars in Rome and in Bologna. Mm-hmm. And the Italian bureaucracy about shooting at any of their antique sites, especially if you want to stick a car in front of it, is unbelievable, which is part of the reason why we're doing this recce, where we're spending 5 days with an amazing Italian fixer going, could we shoot by the Colosseum? And I'm going, no. Could we shoot by the Forum? No.
Money will fix it all.
Exactly.
Was it a bit like the scene in The Italian Job where the bloke walks up the steps and says, well, I think you should all wish yourselves good luck. And then the dodgy Italian guy walks up behind. Did you have that dodgy Italian guy following you up the steps? He's always there.
You've got another problem.
Yeah.
The mafia. Such a great line.
There's a shadow movie we can make about you making him. I think it's good. We should go.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm not sure about driving around Rome. I like driving anywhere. I'd rather be driving than walking anywhere, but Rome might be the exception. You just can't relax, can you? It comes at you from all sides. You convince yourself, I've got this covered, and then something comes out of nowhere, and you think, well, I didn't see that coming.
Have you ever done one of those golf buggy tours in Rome? Lynn and I went there for a birthday a few years ago, and the hotel said, the best way of seeing Rome in a day is a golf buggy tour.
Nice.
And it's literally a golf buggy on the road in the traffic. Because you go down quite narrow street stuff and get to places where you wouldn't otherwise go. The most extraordinary experience of my life, because it's sort of standard golf, but it's not like souped up. It's not like a Speciale golf buggy. It's a little golf buggy with all of the structure and integrity and protection of a chip bag. It was brilliant. It's a lovely way of seeing Rome, but I didn't see much of it through clenched shut eyes.
That'd be good.
I don't know. So everyone's covered. So I started my week really ice driving with the Tuttle bunch. I'm not going to bore. Everyone knows what this is about. I don't want to eulogize too much, but it is probably the best thing you can do in a car. It's wonderful. He's my mate. I can't do too much of a sales pitch, but last gallon of petrol, it's probably up near Åre or Åre, however you pronounce it.
Åre
in Sweden on a lake. Driving with your mates, it is just fantastic fun. Reminded me that obviously I'm massively overweight and out of shape because I was totally ruined after about 3 hours on the ice. But it really is a fantastic place, and also the food's fantastic.
Yeah.
SAS Scandinavian Airline Services stitched us on the way out, so we ended up spending 6.5 hours in Stockholm Airport, which is not the best airport in the world, I have to say. On the way back, there was a fist fight in passports as well, so that wasn't smooth. However, the main part of my week, my motoring week, was this. I continue my journey of discovery with the E61 M5. Every time something happens to the car, it goes wrong, which is on a weekly basis now, I get lovely notes on Instagram from people that own these cars and say, that happened to me as well. That's a common fault. I don't know. There should be notice boards around the UK saying these are the common faults of the E61 M5. Anyhow, I was driving down the M5 at a reasonable lick on, when was it, Saturday night or Friday night? And it was raining hard. And I heard a weird noise on the leading edge of my windscreen. And I then saw one wiper. Well, they weren't working in parallel. One did this, hit the other one, whacked into the A-pillar, punctured the A-pillar, ripped the trim off it.
What?
And then the wiper decided, with the metal bit, decided to sort of eject itself over the top of the car, hit the car behind. Sorry, car behind. I did apologise. Couldn't do much about it. And then I was left driving like that, couldn't really do much. And luckily, the rain abated and I could get myself back to base. So I put a little video up on Instagram. But of course, I had dozens of people saying, same thing happened to me. It's a very common problem. The bearing fails. I've never had a car that's had its
window. Never. No.
It's not great, really. Anyhow.
Did it physically came off?
No, the arm stayed on. It's got the It's that curious era of BMW, which started with the E39, where they have a left-hand drive wiper assembly for right-hand cars. They didn't want to spend the money tooling to go the other way. But it's got two fixture points on the arm that's the side of the driver.
Yeah.
One of them failed. The other one stayed on. So the arm stayed in place. I mean, this is riveting stuff, I know. But the bearing failed so comprehensively that the ball races are actually all lying beautifully on the inside where that plastic...
I
can buy the part. It's a couple hundred quid, but literally something goes wrong every single week with that car. I love it more and more. It is sensational. That engine is the best, and I will fix this myself and we'll be going. But Tuttle ice driving and failed wipers is my week.
Does anyone use Rain-X?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, in a race car.
Not on a race, not on a road car.
No, I've never tried it, but I've, cause you basically don't need windscreen wipers, then, do you?
Only when it works when you're moving. If you're not moving, it will still bead.
And also,
but if you're not moving, doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, but Rain-X collects dirt. That's the problem with Rain-X.
It's waxy,
and it once the dirt gets in it, you get this sort of weird opaqueness, and then you have to resist the temptation as a racing driver to flick the wiper. If you flick the wiper, then you're done.
That's death.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
It's best for visors on lids.
Yeah, it's good for that. And the anti-fog one you put on the inside.
The anti-fog is essential in... Yeah.
Right.
Were you thinking about getting some, Neil, to put on the roofless Bentley?
No, I just, you know, it was a thing that I've never tried, and I've tried most things.
When I
report back, Neil, have a go. Report back.
When I bought the first G-Wagon I had, a friend of mine who deals in such things said there's a ceramic coating you can put on the windscreen that acts like Rain-X.
That's Bernie Madoff.
I knew it was good. So I had it put on, and it was impossible to get rid of. And what it did was it made the wiper blade did that. I just was done.
It instantly aged your wipers by 10 years,
Leave windskin alone and use squeezy, as my mother used to say.
We need a conversation about ceramic coatings.
Oh, I saw you coming.
I'm an advocate that my yellow car has lasted well. Our next topic this week, proposed by Neil Clifford, this is good. What or who is your favourite TV sleuth? Mm-hmm. And if they were alive today, what would they drive? Edward Lovett, do you even have a favourite TV show? If you don't strike...
I'm glad you asked me that question, because I don't think I do. It's not really my... I say it's not my jam, and then I started having a little poke around. But I couldn't really find any that I love that what they drive.
I've got one for you.
One that you like?
Well, there's one that you'll like as well.
There are loads of them. But they're not the sort of the... When I think sleuth, it's not really my era.
There are sleuths for all eras, aren't there?
Yeah.
Well, let's come back to me, Christopher. But I've written some down, but they were a bit
Don't
of a...
Don't bloody list a bit all of them, punt. For Christ's sake. We want to do ours.
Well, I want to... Actually, the one I thought this is sort of typical of what I think a sleuth would be driving, which is the latest Luther. And I don't know if you've watched Luther, but it's very good. And he drives a shitty old Saab. That's kind of, you know, he's legit. He's focused on his job.
Or is he trying a bit too hard with the shitty old Saab?
I don't think that's the point. He's not trying. He doesn't want to think about his car. He is under a cover somewhere. Yeah.
You wouldn't end up with those if you weren't thinking about cars.
By the way, can we agree that there's that episode of Luther which starts in a woman's bedroom and it's all quiet. She's asleep. And you see a leg come out from underneath the bed. It is the most horrific scene. I remember thinking, I can't watch this. Go and watch that episode. Some bloke who's hiding, who's up to no good, hiding under her bed and emerges. It's everyone's ultimate nightmare. The way they shoot the scene is so powerful. Sorry, thinking about it now makes me shake.
The one car I was trying to think, what would be the modern interpretation? Is a white Testarossa. If you drove a white Testarossa back in the day, what would you drive today?
That's a good question.
I thought it'd probably be in today.
A Maserati MC20.
Well, some kind of
that's not a bad call. That's not a bad call.
Yeah.
Something mid-engined a bit out there.
Hmm.
Okay, so Edward, I shouldn't have checked you first. It's a lovely little chat we've had there, but you've not really bought into the sleuth thing. So I'm going to go straight to Manish, who I think is a bit more sleuthy.
Well, I think the best sleuth ever, in my opinion, was Columbo. I mean, by absolute. He's just, did you know, when Peter Falk at his absolute peak was the highest paid actor in anything, anywhere, he was paid $350,000 an episode at that show's peak in the 70s. That is just scary money if you think about it. You've been in TV, you know what people earn. I mean, can you just imagine earning that kind of money in the kind of mid to late 70s? Now, if you've watched any of the early ones, Steven Spielberg, when he was 19, directed this one particular episode sort of set in. I can't remember. It's certainly on the coast in California. It's fantastic. Handheld cameras, tension like you couldn't believe. I mean, that show is scripted to a point of absolute genius. I mean, imagine two people sitting down and going, we've got this idea. We'll show you a murder and we'll show you exactly how clever the murderer is and what the murderer does. And then we'll get this bumbling fool to come along and meet the murderer. And some instinct is going to tell him that's the murderer. And for the next hour, it's all about the tension between the two of them. It's like an arm assault, and this little man in his coat is going to win. And by the way, did you know that the coat had the jacket and the shirt all... They were basically tailored. He wasn't wearing a shirt, a jacket, and a coat. The whole thing was just something, otherwise he'd be so hot. Can you imagine what that set would have been like? So he used to have... I don't know if you remember, he had a... It was either a basset hound or a...
Is a basset hound.
I think he did, and he had a Peugeot 503, and it was a convertible, and it was patty as hell, and it was pretty because he'd often a lot of these murders were committed by the rich or whatever the great and the good of Beverly Hills, and he would drive. It was fantastic. It was like, do you remember Fraser's father had that really annoying seat right in the middle of his? This car was just like that. It just offended the kind of rich millionaire, who committed the perfect murder. And this guy he was so offensive. And I was thinking, what could you possibly have today that would piss off If we bought Colombo to the UK to Belgravia, Edward, and there are murders in Belgravia, so we just basically do Colombo again. But there's always a kind of murder. It's either in Belgravia, or it's in Kensington, or it's in Chelsea, or it's in wherever that place is in Norfolk, you know, which is the Chelsea on Sea.
Aldborough.
I think it would have to be Del Boy's Reliant Robin. I think that is.
That's brilliant.
Slow Horses, Gary Oldman?
Yes.
The car he's got in that. I mean, I think that's, there's a lot of Columbo being channeled there, and he's just brilliant. Yes. But he's got a rather shitty old yellow Honda Civic or whatever it is. It's which he's clearly flatulated in constantly. The fabric of the car is collapsing through gaseous poisoning. It's just, it's that kind of thing. Yeah.
Chris's M5 Touring with its tow hook cover out on the front and a track day number on the back, that could do it as well.
So critical, Edward. It's a used car, a used vehicle. Okay, I'm on with that. Chris Cooper, who's your favourite sleuth? And what would they drive now?
Well, it's got to be Dempsey and Makepeace, hasn't it?
Mm, good.
Well, or as I used to think when I was younger, Makepeace and me.
She's still beautiful.
And she is.
Still,
she's lovely.
They're still
Barbie.
Married. They are still married.
Yeah, Brandon, what's his name, and Glynis Barbie are very happy. They literally lived happily. Are living happily ever after. What did she drive in that series, though?
It wasn't an XR3, it was a 1.6i.
Well done.
Yes.
Well done. It was the XR3 lookalike convertible, but it was a 1.6i. Do you know why it wasn't called an XR3?
No, you've got me there.
It didn't have an XR3 engine. It was it was like the Gen 2 Mark III Ford Escort was an XR3 because it had a bit more power in it.
Yeah.
So I think today, Makepeace, in my world, she and Dempsey, what did Dempsey drive? Anyone remember?
SL 500.
It probably wasn't an SL500 because it was an SL4 early 107, 350, something like 380, I think 350. Probably 380. So I think now she'd be a consulting crime sleuth of considerable means. So I think she'd have a DB12 convertible. That's what I think she'd have.
She was an out-and-out rocket. It's the only word I can use to describe her. Neil Clifford.
Well, I've got two only because if I didn't go first, I knew someone would have Columbo. Because Columbo is my favourite. And just as a reference on Columbo, my decision on his car was a 205 CTI Roland Garros.
That's good.
Just to maintain the French convertible thing. Green.
What colour?
I think they were only in green.
They were.
So my plan B was, do you remember Hazel?
Yes.
That's a super niche British, sort of slightly minder-ish, but not as successful as a TV programme. But he was a very good-looking chap, basically. His name was James Hazel. Because I was going to go Shoestring as well. And there's also the guy with the polio. I couldn't remember his name. Or maybe that was Shoestring. Anyway, I'm back to Hazel.
Yeah.
He had a Triumph Stag.
Yes.
Triumph.
Poor bloke.
Triumph Stag, exactly. So I'm thinking, what is as shit as a Triumph Stag, but a little bit more modern? So it's got to be British. So I went TVR, but then you've got to do almost the worst TVR, because most TVRs are quite good.
They are.
But then there was that, what was it, TVRS?
That was a good one.
Was it?
That was the first of the Peter Wheeler era.
The first of the Peter Wheeler, and there was a V8 one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So I because the Stag was V8.
3-litre V8.
Yeah, so it's a little V8. So I've gone TVRS, but the V8 with the bonnet bulge. And I think Hazel Part 2 would probably be just screaming around in that, because a Triumph Stag, apart from the overheating, Triumph Stag's quite cool, actually. I think it's quite a pretty car.
Yes, it is.
It's just a shit car, but it's pretty. And I think maybe the TVR SV8 is probably in that genre. Pretty and shit.
Didn't the Trump stack have record tiny oil change routine? It yes. all changed like every like the
2,000 miles.
You drove it away from the garage and drove it straight back. Oil change.
Yeah, that's right. But they had some good colours in Triumph Stags.
Oh, they did. Yeah,
good colours and a nice dashboard. And the blue was nice.
And it would. Do you know what? That would be one of my guilty pleasures. I think it's a great looking car. I love it too.
With the tin roof.
For the image.
You know, when Hammer were starting to really run out of money and recycling their Dracula films, they made I highly recommend it, a film called Dracula AD 1972.
Yes.
Do you remember this? Caroline Monroe was in it, Stephanie Beach. And what they do is you've got all these 30-year-olds pretending to be 19, which I have no problem with at all. And there are a bunch of groovy kids who live in Chelsea who bring Dracula back. And the baddie amongst them is a guy called Johnny Alucard. And if you spell Alucard backwards, it's Dracula, the disciple. And he's this sort of rich, rich Chelsea living Etonian who has tickets for, you know, all jazz concerts. And he actually shags Marsha Hunt in this as well. But Johnny Alucard.
In the shag or in the Triumph shag or not?
No, Triumph shag. In his flat. But he's got a flat with a mezzanine and one of those showers with an outdoor view. I mean, it's incredible. But he has a Triumph Stag.
Yeah.
That is Johnny Alucard's car.
Yeah. Look at the front end on that. I have to say.
It's good.
The grill and front end on that.
Yeah.
It's a good car.
Yeah.
We should buy one.
No. Yeah, and the wheels, those alloy wheels, they were... In my book, they're just behind the GK and Kent alloys on the XJ. They stay.
It'll be worth more than an Aston Martin Vantage V12 at some point.
Who'd have thunk that we would be the Triumph Stag Appreciation Society? I thought we'd be spitting on that thing, but we are celebrating it. So you're all wrong about the sleuth. The greatest ever is Morse, obviously. I love Morse. I don't have any memories, people know, but I can remember just about every word of every Morse. The car was very, very particular. So it was the story behind it was that they got the wrong car. It's got the wrong roof. It's got everything's wrong about it, but they stuck with it. John Thor hated driving the bloody thing because it wouldn't work. It was a pain in the ass. I've driven the actual car. They fixed it now. It's rather lovely. It lives in storage. Never gets used. I think it's owned by an Australian gentleman. So what would a modern Mark II Jag be? And more importantly, what were the reasons for Colin Dexter giving him this car? Well, it's because he's a curmudgeon. He doesn't want to be modern. So he wants to use his car to demonstrate his displeasure with modern society. Pretty basic TV theme, I have to admit, for a sleuth. So, but there isn't really an equivalent now. There's nothing that's 20, 30 years old that we can celebrate as being British, I don't think. You can't go for a sports car. It has to be a saloon car. So I think Morse has happened across a few quid. He was left a few quid by a rich aunt, and he's bought a Bristol Fighter.
Yeah,
because it's British, and he can sit in there. He can play he can play the Valkyrie and whinge about modern society and how he hates Vivaldi for some reason. And he can do his crosswords from the comfort of a Bristol Fighter, which might work now and again. And if he does break down, he can phone Neil Clifford because he knows all about them.
Yeah, I do.
Really.
Itches that need scratching. Not a dermatological conundrum, a car conundrum. So, Chris Cooper, and I can say this with a straight face, what's your itch and how many scratches?
I've got loads. That's the problem. If they really were itches, I'd look like that bloke from The Singing Detective.
Mm.
Just by the end of the thing, you just have... I had loads written down. Some of them Finley and Cameron gave me, which I suddenly realised weren't my itches. They were their itches to be scratched. So things like, yes, I noticed, so boys, yes, McLaren 765, yes, very good, well done. Yeah. I will scratch that itch at some point. BMW 325 convertible. Somebody mentioned it earlier, and I just thought, that is definitely an itch.
Yeah, they're good.
Definitely an itch. And I've got quite close a couple of times. There was one that, what's the garage? Is it Nutley Garage?
Nutley, yeah. They have good cars. Yeah.
And a few years ago, they had one of they had JK's 325 convertible.
Grey with red.
Grey with red.
I know the car, yeah.
Yeah. And it went for highly reasonable sum of money. So if anybody's got that and wants an entirely reasonable sum of money for it, please do get in touch. That is one itch I would
someone,
like.
Someone who bought their itch to scratch convertible, which was a W124, whatever you call it. No, it's not a W, is it? It's a 124 320 Sportline convertible. I bought one of those. Everyone that wants to buy one of those should buy the car Chris is talking about, the E30 convertible. It's just as big, much more reliable, and much cooler, I think.
Nicer engine.
My convertible four-seat Benz never gets used because it's never working.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I scratch. Yeah.
Okay. Manish, what would you like to scratch in regards to an itch?
Actually, I am organising for this to happen at the end of this week. But my... No. 456 is much bigger than an itch. That feels more like some transplant surgery, nice. Frankly. It's essential. I'm going to die without...
It's a tumescence of different proportion.
Porsche Boxster.
Exactly. No. And it, Mr. Renault Alpine. When Mr. Cooper gets a moment, he's gonna have a quick look in. What was the garage number again? With one.
It's Hangar 136.
Hangar 136 has got.
Yeah.
The car in it. I know it's an automatic, but I've just decided it's so beautiful, I should buy it, provided it doesn't fall apart. But that's not the itch. The itch is my my Audi A4 Avant is 17 this year. I just hit 40,000 miles with it, doing a short errand last week. And I just decided, honestly, the only frustrating thing is in London, people are very rude about parking. So it's got quite a few parking scratches on every little corner. So I'm going to drop it into a body shop and I'm going to have all the scratches polished out. So the car looks absolutely brand new. And one of the alloys has got a little, and that was my fault. I know, I can't look at it. So no. I'm going to spend a couple of £1,000 on a car that's worth, I think, five, making it look good. That is the itch I'm going to scratch. And I'm going to scratch it this week.
Just get Chips Away to pop around.
Oh, they can't. Can they do all four corners?
It depends how bad it is, Manish.
Yeah. Well,
I've got the man for you, Manish.
And they're crap drivers. That's the...
Neil will send someone around. £500 cash.
I like that. I like renewing and replenishing at the moment. I'm doing this. I like it. Renew and replenish.
Yeah.
So it feels like a new car. You know, put new dampers, put new wiper blades on the car. Feels like a new car.
Yeah.
Ed would love it. What are you gonna scratch on this?
What did we do a few weeks ago where you talked about doing Le Mans?
Bucket list.
Okay, fine.
It's similar, you're right.
No, it's fine, but I my cars that I have in London have either got two seats or four seats, but there's nothing really fun with four seats. So I might be 325 convertible. We might all be looking for one of those soon.
Yeah.
Or still that Bentley itch needs scratching. So Neil, I could borrow Neil's with its broken roof and sort of send it back with a fixed roof. But some sort of four-seater family convertible cabriolet solution is probably something that needs itching for this summer.
I have loads of those.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what it should be. What would you have today?
Well, it's a good question.
Let's set a budget. Let's sub £60,000.
Okay, I've got just the answer. I think it would be...
Four-seater convertible.
The current BMW 8 Series, 850, not the M8 one, but the 850M, M850M cab, you could get in that price range. You could also get an S560 Merc. I quite like them. I just reminded me at the weekend when I drove this little BMW, those seats, the way those seats work. So you've got some good choice in there.
You'd buy an 8 Series, and the first time you saw someone in an S63 cab, you'd go, balls, I got that wrong.
Yeah, but not for his budget.
You just would. Yeah, you would. You'd get one for 60 grand.
No, you get black wheels, and it would look a bit slightly abused, and people would say, oh, dear. Look, he's got his children in there as well.
Everything can be painted.
I might go and fly a Belgravia, see if I can pick myself up one of those that was sort of dotted on the streets that never gets used.
Neil Clifford, how do we ask you what itch you haven't scratched? Because your list of car ownership is profound, say the least. So
I've still got a better list than Manish. I've had eczema, actually, genuinely, from a kid. So I can name Oil of Ulatum, Betnovate, Epiderm, E45. I've had all the creams, and I've still got the itches. And if I'm going to name one, and they are constant, it is actually TVR. I've never had a TVR. I'd love a TVR Griffith. I think that is an itch that I do have. I have to admit that, Governor.
I think it's a great itch. I think you won't be. You would be the sense of relief and lingering satisfaction from the salving ointment to your soul that Griffith would be.
I think it's an itch that probably doesn't last that long because they're probably not as good as you want them to be. I've got this lovely little 10 grand Boxster, which genuinely is just immensely fantastic. It's 95% of a 300 grand speedster. Man maths out the window, because it's just a fantastic car. It's a bit like the Alpina. I've come late to an Alpina and a Boxster, and they're fantastic cars. 10 grand on a Boxster is all you need to have car pleasure.
Yeah.
You should go and drive a brand new one and see what you think about a 100 grand Boxster versus a 10 grand Boxster.
You think they are just, you think that £90,000 is on the flattest part of the curve?
Yeah, no, honestly, it's got the Carrera, the first series Boxster's even got the Carrera GT font.
Really?
Yeah, on the dials. It's just immensely good. Everything else is diminishing returns. It's a bit like hi-fi or watches or clothes or shoes, or I suppose any consumer goods, really. There's a sweet spot where it does 90% of everything for like 10% of the cost, and the Boxster is that.
All of the Porsche centres throughout the UK, and I don't know if they've done this as sort of a worldwide initiative, got their workshops to convert Boxsters into racing cars. And then they had someone from one of the technicians became a racing driver, and they've been doing a racing series, which is a brilliant way. And they're doing the same with the KN as well.
Brilliant, that is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's clever. Yeah.
So I did answer my question. Yeah, TVR.
Yeah.
I'm sort of with Neil on how you should answer this. It should be something you've never owned before. And if I write down my list of brands that I've not owned, there's one obvious gap for me. It's the best sounding car name of them all. It's Maserati. I've never owned a Maserati.
Mm.
And I'm not sure. Jeremy always said to me, you can't say you're a true car fan unless you've owned an Alfa Romeo. I think it should be Maserati. I think it's the greatest sounding car name. So what would I have? Most of the sports cars are rubbish. But I do think the open top four-seat thing is rather lovely.
Gran Turismo.
But
it would have to be a Quattroporte S, because I just think it's the original Quattroporte. It's the coolest car they've made in the last 30 years. And that S one actually did go quite well. It sounded absurd, but it went quite well. And they're about £30,000. I think they're gorgeous. I've got no need for the car whatsoever.
Sorry, when you say that you mean the 2010 era car.
Well, it ended then, didn't it? So it'd be about an 2009 car, probably.
But with the ZF automatic gearbox.
Yeah, and the stiff suspension that ruins the ride. But they just look fantastic.
Great cars. Yeah.
And I have to own a Maserati one day. I've never owned one.
I've seen them under 20.
Those S ones are a bit more.
4.7 with the gearbox. Okay. Yeah, I think it's a great choice. I've now got two itches.
Right. I mean, I've got about 10 of them.
Yeah,
the itch defines one searching when you're in bed before you go to sleep, doesn't it? That's
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah.
Okay. Home servicing.
Hmm.
Will it end soon? It has to, doesn't it? I mean, I can't see how the EU will allow you to tamper with your own car soon. Everything's sealed, isn't it? I saw a video the other day. You can't actually put oil into a McLaren 720S without actually getting a spanner out. You can't pop a lid. You have to take a spanner out to take a grill off to put oil into it.
Shit. So,
yeah, it's a funny old world, isn't it? Neil Clifford, what do you think? You like a tinker, don't you?
Well, this came into my mind because of the visit to the Haynes Museum and seeing, you know, the amount of money this guy made, frankly, on those incredible books that we all owned, you know, or a mate lent you one, an oily version of it in the early 80s to do your tappets or whatever shit you were attempting to do, which you then fucked.
That was advanced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my first job was in the Fiat garage in Portsmouth on the YTS scheme. And I always remember those oilio Fiat cans of oil and filters that probably 10 times a day, a guy would come in and buy an oil and filter and go back to his house and just service his car, right? Set of spark plugs. It was normal, wasn't it? I just don't think that happens at all anymore. I mean, we were always in Halfords buying filler, sandpaper, because you'd obviously traversed your Mark I Escort into a lamppost or something down the fair or some shit that happened, and you'd just repair it yourself. And you'd buy the spray cans. You know, clearly I'm very old, but no, I don't think any of that happens anymore, and it's sad that it doesn't.
Neil's coming to North London to do your car this afternoon, Manish. £250 cash.
You know, in Halfords, a third of the bloody shop 20 years ago was oil filters and, you know, air filters. And
yeah,
I'm sure it doesn't even exist in Halfords anymore, does it?
No, it's just Garmin stuff and other GPS and...
Yeah.
The garish accoutrement of the modern world.
How many places can you find now that their hourly rate is less than £100? I mean, garages are totally taking the piss, aren't they?
Yeah. We had, Neil, you and I had that conversation the other day about a garage that we both know where the pre-VAT labour rate is £130 an hour. So basically you're paying ink VAT for a sort of a day, £1,200 a day.
Yeah. I think it's ridiculous.
So that's six times the junior doctor salary.
Just absurd.
Yeah. I know we're exactly. A bunch of bony fuckers,
Go get your Chiron service. See what they charge you an hour for that.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
That's all the doctors driving those.
Yeah. Well, as I was growing up, my father, I did the whole cycle through the car dealership, working in every department. My father said, "I knew you must be able to service your." I used to be able to service my Mini when I was growing up. And I don't think I was ever brave enough to tell him what I was thinking, but I just wanted to go outside and pop the bonnet on whatever demonstrator I was driving at the time, saying, right, go and fucking service that. Go figure that out, Peter. They're just...
You can't.
As Chris said, you know, well, with a McLaren where you have to unscrew something to put oil in it, you know, most, you know, go into the back of a 911 now and try and figure out, it's all just plastic covers. Even a small little area of a 911 engine, you can't, there's nowhere to get your hands in there. And the front engine cars, I think, are even worse. It's just all made to look pretty.
I mean, the cars have changed. I mean, it's obvious, the technology's changed. I was thinking, when I was in Portsmouth at the Polytechnic, and we had a motor club, And we had a garage in one of the lockups, somewhere in the university. So we had a garage that had the Polytechnic Motor Club auto test car that was always in at least six large pieces. Welding kit, really nice set of spanners, which actually mostly hadn't been nicked. And we'd have stuff for doing the distributor points gap. I mean, people would know what the gap should be in distributor points because it had a distributor. And we'd know what the gap should be, what the timing. We'd have a little timing light.
Yes.
So you could look at the sort of the marks on the flywheel to see whether the timing was right. Cars don't need that these days. I mean, my father recently died, and when I sort of looked through, I need to go back, we need to finish the process really. But I looked at some of the photographs he had out and about of me when I was younger. And an awful lot of them, I'm wearing a boiler suit. And it's got oil and stuff on it. I mean, because I was trying to fix my Mini. Minis these days don't need that kind of fixing. So I think the need, the art, the it's slowly fading away. And I feel sort of embarrassed now that, because we've got a Mikey on the farm. And if I think, hang on, I quite like an oil change in my Defender, I could probably do that. I can foam pan the parts, but I think what to do with the oil? I need a Mikey to dispose of the oil because the days of probably somebody chucking it out the back of the garden somewhere. Or,
exactly.
Funny enough, you can't do that anymore, which is probably entirely correct. So, yeah, I think it's
over, isn't it?
That's one of the joys of going to historic motorsport is seeing them prepare and tinker with the cars.
That's true, with
a handful of tools. You know, there's no computers there. When Chris and I went out to Chicago last year and they were running a hack and an F1 car, I don't know what era of laptop they were on, Chris, to fire it up. Do you remember? I was thinking, what happens when that laptop stops working? Does the car stop working?
Basically,
Basically.
It's interesting, isn't it? This was brought into sharp focus for me a few weeks ago when the battery or suspected battery problem with my yellow 911. So I'm not great at servicing cars. I'd normally choose to take them somewhere else for someone that's good at it. I used to be able to service my Mini and my Peugeots back in the day, but that's a long time ago. But I would have thought that the extent of my maintenance would be replacing a battery in a car. If you've got a few cars, it's the most common thing you do. The triple charger clip comes off, it doesn't work, you go and buy another battery. You can't do that on a 991. I know, I was told. You have to go, and the battery has to be coded to the car. So unless the battery can talk to the car won't acknowledge the battery. So if you've got a dead battery in your 991 GT3, you can't just go to Halfords and get another one. You've got to go to the Porsche Center, and then they've got to code it to make it work. So even the battery's kind of been infiltrated by technology. It's quite strange. It's not a whinge as much for me. I feel lucky that I was never that great a tinkerer. So I've not had an avenue of pleasure denied me. But if you were a real tinkerer, and let's face it, people that bought TVRs when I started doing this for a living, they loved the cars breaking down because it gave them shit to do. That's what they want. There was a masochism to it that we all loved. You know, if the thing ran faultlessly for a couple of months, they'd be utterly pissed off. They can get underneath it and swear and take sump guards off, whatever they're doing. But actually, I think for me, I was never that great a spanner. So I've not really lost anything. But I was amazed that a modern car can't just buy a battery. I thought that was incredible. I was totally unaware of that.
I would say, just by analogy, this idea that you buy something from someone and there's literally nothing that you can do to it without that someone's permission and without that someone maybe doing it. 5 years ago, these Apple laptops used to have these rubbery feet that went through a hole into the base of the chassis. And they had a kind of, they'd expand out, and they were quite notorious for falling out. And when they fell out, you couldn't just shove them back in.
You needed a tool.
Get this. So I phoned Apple and said, oh, look, I've had this computer now for 7 months. Yeah, this thing's fallen out. I can't get it back in. She said, oh, just take it to the Genius Bar. They'll do it for you. So I went to the Genius Bar. And the guy went away with it. He looked like something the Reverend Moon had created, this guy. He came back and he said, no, the only way to do it, we have to actually take the computer apart, lift out the PCB, and then we can put it in. And I said, what? And he said, I'll be £125. And I said, this thing's worth about 2p, and I was told to come here. And he said, well, you were given incorrect advice, sir. We need to take the computer apart to be able to put this back in. And I said, look, can we just have a common sense conversation here? Do you not think that's ridiculous? And he said to me straight up, he said, are you asking me to criticize the people I work for, sir?
That's quite a good answer.
Yeah.
I ran out of there and I went to Homebase, and they've got those little rubber cork sticky things. And I, do you know what? Yeah. For 2p, I found the, I remember thinking then, my God, you know, talk about handing over complete. I used to build little computers when I was doing. Yeah, we all used to do that. We used to get.
Did they work?
No. Yeah, clever people like you did. We didn't. We used to run.
No, we did. So, I mean, you know, at the time when the Acorn Atom was a big thing. I mean, obviously,
I was the fire engine in the playground.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, a friend of mine, you'd buy these printed circuit boards, you'd whack on the processor, you'd get the memory, you'd do all your stuff, and it, you know, they kind of work, they kind of wouldn't work. We all learned assembly language. And this guy was going to try to charge me £125 to.
I was doing Muppet Swedish chef impersonations in the language lab. Yeah. I wasn't learning about. Gosh, that's quite clever, Manish.
I was chucking stones at Parky on my grifter.
We were real nerds. I wrote some of, I thought, the finest video games of the 80s that I never sold. I mean, yeah.
Well, better than Horace Goes Skiing.
There was one called Meteor Run, which was a cross between Space Invaders and Galaxians. You had a spaceship. And it could be up, down, left, right. And the meteors were coming at you like this. You could either dodge them or shoot them.
Yeah.
And the game wasn't quick. We all learned assembly language, not because we wanted to program, you know, Elon Musk space. We did it just because our video games would be faster. That's the only reason to learn it.
Galaxian, so much. Wow. That's a great game.
Back in the day.
Was that a ZX81 or a ZX Spectrum or a BBC Micro?
No, I learned on a ZX80. My physics teacher, Mr. Trebello, bought one for £200, had 1K of memory. So it was a predecessor. But no, most of it was on the BBC Model B.
Yeah.
Wow.
With the tape recorder machine. On the
we
side.
Had a tape recorder.
Little tapes.
Yeah.
I got bought a little floppy drive. It was amazing. Yeah. It changed my life.
If you had control of the UK motorway signs network for a day, what would you put on it? Neil Clifford.
I would write, please stop picking your nose. It's disgusting. I just think that would be hilarious, wouldn't it? Because, you know, it is the place you pick your nose, the car. I know that's a rather controversial thing to say, but if you are going to pick your nose,
that's the way you do it.
The car is the safest place.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think that would be quite jolly if you did that and then film all the male reactions. Because I don't think women really pick their nose. It's a male thing, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a good point. I've not seen a woman pick her nose. That's a really good observation.
Yeah.
They blow it.
They
women
do it properly.
Are generally just more decent, aren't they? I think we tend to pick more than blow, I think.
Okay. I was telling my daughter off the weekend for picking your nose. She said, Daddy, I'm not picking your nose. I'm just getting a bogey out.
Yes. She's right. She's right. Chris Cooper, what would you write on the signs?
So I would write, when those signs say incident ahead, report of debris, report of pedestrians, report of something or other, I would write, sorry, we made it up. Who's ever seen, you know, reports of whatever it is? You think, it's never there. I was on one of those speed awareness courses because they had this thing about, you know, oh, did you slow down for this? I said, there's never anything there. It was a speed awareness course where when they said, well, why did you speed? And everyone's giving erudite answers about different. I said, because it's fun. So
can't say that.
Well, you can. It's true. I did say it was because it's fun. And they said, that's the best answer we've ever had. So every time I go on a speed awareness course now, that's the answer I give. I would have a bit of honesty. It's not speed kill. Speed doesn't kill. It's stopping suddenly that kills. So you'd say, pay attention, you lazy bastards. Brake better.
Yeah.
Pay attention,
Yeah, pay attention. And I'd find some way of some sort of, because the technology exists to have number plate recognition. And the next sign down, it would have all the number plates of the lazy so-and-sos were stuck in the middle lane.
I think that's good. Yeah. They've started saying that now, haven't they? Don't hog the middle lane.
Yeah, which everyone does. So I've sort of, however many lanes you put on a motorway, it's only the outer two lanes that ever get used, which I think is, if I ruled the world. But one of the questions the boys have suggested for what we discussed, which we'll discuss another time, is if you could build a new motorway, where would you build it? So I would have a bit of honesty on the signs. And I say, and I think I'd also have somewhere on that some recognition to say, that Chris Cooper, he's driving really well today. Talking of which, the weekend, one thing I noticed in the Highlands, we talked about is we had a Motorsport UK dinner board in last night, and we talked about whether driving standards have got better or worse, generally, despite all the regulation and low traffic networks and blah, blah, blah. In Scotland the weekend, I thought the driving standards were really good. Really good.
And what was the sign of that?
It's a good question. So courtesy, anticipation, awareness. So passing places. You know, you and I both live in country lanes where the single track, everybody thinks they own the lane. They'll go past a passing space. You know, you and I, we'd always end up reversing. Scotland, everybody saw a passing space, they waited. I saw an Alpine being driven really beautifully, not stupid fast, but nicely fast on the road over the Lech down towards Tom and Tull. A really nice Alpine. It wasn't one of the R's, but it had like a two-tone bonnet. It didn't have the wing, but it was really, so if that was you on Sunday on the road from the Lech to Tom and Tull, I salute you, sir or madam. So yeah, I would have a bit of honesty on motorway signs.
Chris Cooper, you're driving well today is one of the best shouts we've ever had on the podcast.
Yeah, I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, Ed would love it. What would you type?
List for free, sell for free, hassle free, collecting cars.
Because
you've got the full... I actually wrote down what Chris pretty much said there. So because you've got a lot of the motorways have the full gantry across the all lanes now. I think some sort of rating of the driver, so a thumbs up or a thumbs down for your speed, your lane discipline, whether you have cheese and onion crisps in the car, that clearly gets a thumb down.
Yeah, definitely.
What your sweetie of choice is, that gets a thumbs up. Yeah, so just a rating system for how the algorithm is judging your driving.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, and then some very abusive language for poor driving.
Manage, what would you type?
Well, I love this idea of the digital gantry. I don't know if any of you know, I give you a little anatomical term. You probably all do know the colloquial expression. Glans, penis. Glans, penis. Dickhead. Okay. And the bottom line is, I would like a digital glans, penis over the middle lane with automatic number plate recognition for everyone who sits in it for life. Yeah. You just go through, you see a massive penis, and there's your registration plate underneath. Again, there's another one. And you just keep doing it until the guys use the lane properly.
Mm.
There is, I was discussing this last week, actually, that in one of the European countries, is it France or Spain? They do have big signs that put up your number plate if you're speeding. And so you're going to get a ticket as well, but there's a sort of public shaming thing. But they put it up, and actually many Brits treat it as a badge of honour because we're naughty like that. So it's like, yeah, of course, I thought I was going faster than that. But I there's something about knowing that Big Brother's watching you that I think is missing on the roads. And we're so
advanced. Missing.
Yeah, we're so advanced in so many other areas of our lives, we feel we're being watched the whole time. But we're not really being watched in our cars in the same way. We're having our speed monitored, but not our behaviour or our skill. It's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've always felt that I would love, and this is pretty fanciful, my head's gone over there somewhere now. I like the idea of there being an arbiter of every 50-50 ball. Driving is about 50-50 balls. And it's good, and it'd be good to have someone tell you straight away afterwards who was right, who was wrong. So you have a little dust up, a little scuffle, or you think, what did you do wrong? The next sign says, you in the red BMW, you were right. Or the next one, they go, you were wrong. You were wrong about that. I just
like a VAR, like a driving VAR.
Exactly. Hawkeye or something that's telling us what we whether we were right or wrong. Because that stays with me. I can sometimes have a little incident, the wrong word, but I can have a little sort of situation where I think to myself, did I get that completely wrong? And I don't resolve it really until I get to the end of the journey. I'm still thinking, did I do anything wrong there or not? I love the idea of a higher power on a screen going, you did that right. That other person was a complete cock.
So motorway VAR, that's good.
And the other one that I think you'd have to allow yourself is some bad behaviour. I think I told this story already. I was once driving across the Severn Bridge and there was a rude word on the sign and it said, fuck it, it's my last day on the sign going over the Severn Bridge.
What's the worst they can do?
I thought I was so... Because it can't have been easy to get access to that particular keyboard. So whoever did that, you are an out-and-out legend. And it did make me nearly crash the Focus RS Gen 1 as it was then. It's early in the morning, it just said, fuck it, it's my last day. So motorway signs, done and dusted. Now, our two-car garage this week is an homage to one of the greatest car designers of all time, Mr. Gandini, who passed away, I think, last week. It wasn't this week, it was last week, wasn't it? His CV is so outrageous, it's actually worth going on to Wikipedia and seeing the list of cars that he designed. It's freakish, his talents, frankly, and it spanned the mainstream and, of course, the supercar, which you could argue he sort of defined what a supercar is, really. I think the genesis of the Miura is a bit confused. I don't think we can completely attribute the Miura to him. There's all sorts of arguments about that one. We won't go into that now. It's a soup of arguments. But I think his CV does lend itself to him being called the father of the supercar. So, two-car garage today refers back to... Of course, I haven't got it here typed out. It refers back to a brilliant television advert from the 1980s where they got Mr. Gandini and they filmed him going to work in a BX that he just designed, going off to do his Centro Stile work for some supercar. And I think, I've not watched it recently. Is there a Countach in it or a Diablo?
Countach. Yeah.
So my question to my fellow addicts is, you're a young director and you'll be recreating the famous Citroen advert with Marcel Gandini. You must choose one of his ordinary cars and one of his supercars to star in the advert. Neil Clifford.
What an amazing two-car garage. My first day of work, I walked into that Cannons Fiat dealership, 1983, 25 quid a week, bit nervous, bit spotty, but excited. And there it was. The Fiat X19 Grand Finale sat in the showroom. And I'm like, what a fucking great job I've got here. So I'd 100% have the Fiat X19, the 5-speed, the 1500, the BBS knockoffy wheels, the dark red. I think there was a few colours in the Grand Finale. On a C-Reg, maybe? But anyway, I'd have that. So that would be my sort of normal car, cheap car, because he didn't do many saloons, actually. He was all about the wedge, wasn't he, really? Everything was wedgy. And even though I do have the fortunate position to own an Espada and I adore it, I wouldn't choose it for this TV ad. I would choose a Stratos. I've got a mate with a Stratos, Clever Jason, as he is known, writes a lot of our two-car garages. And when that thing rocks up, Edward and I had a little breakfast with him recently, didn't we? And you see that parked on Berkeley Square. It's like a spaceship.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible thing. So tiny, so beautiful, almost designed for one person, let alone two people, really. You know, that windscreen doesn't have one straight bit on it, does it? It's like a, it's a spaceship out of...
It's a visor. It's like a visor. From a crash helmet, isn't it? It's what it feels like, isn't it?
It's right out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So I'd have an X19 Grand Finale in burgundy and a Stratos in orange.
Manish.
Well, I'm going to bend this one because I loved him so much. As the commercial opens, I've decided I'm going to star in this commercial myself. So I've got my Italian villa. The door opens and I'm wearing a navy blue Laura Piano suit with a white shirt and a grey Hermes tie and black Church's. The dog is Tuco. He's black, so that works. I've never got on with black suits. I come down the stairs. I feel that I still have just enough hair to do a Gandini. I come down with Tuco and we pass a metallic blue Lamborghini Countach LP400. But I'm not taking that car to work. I open the door of my metallic blue Lamborghini Espada. I open it, I push the seat forward, Tuco jumps into the back. I get into the car, I drive to the office, I take out my lovely architectural, because he has a briefcase, beautiful architect's case, you know, where they keep their roll drawing. He has that. He comes out, he looks up, and I wander into work, and I think that is my perfect day.
Did you used to write soft porn movies and novels in the early 90s?
Yeah, Razzle.
Aurum. Edward Lovett, what are you going to have?
Well, I was thinking I'd be in the French Alps, and you would just hear the reverberations of exhaust notes going through the Alps. And then you'd start seeing flashes of colours through the trees. And then as you get towards the bottom of the mountains, you start to see the LP400 Periscopio, and you see a Stratos chasing it, and they're dicing, going to and fro, to and fro. And then they pull up outside the Citroën factory. I don't know where it is, but this one's at the bottom of the French Alps anyway. And then it just cuts to the credits and says, our designer doesn't just do Citroëns. And then it would just say Citroën.
Nice.
Something along those lines. We don't need that. You can buy that. You're thinking you're buying a Lamborghini, but actually it's a Citroën, but it does exactly what you need it to do.
Edward, you know, at the end of the British commercial, they used to get Michael Jaston. He often did lots of voiceovers, and he had such a sinister voice. And at the end of that very beautiful BX commercial, he says, the Citroën BX, what did you drive to work in today?
Yes, his voice. His voice is amazing.
It was a time for heroes.
Horror movie.
Chris Cooper.
So there's just too much to choose from, but extraordinarily for this one, the boys and I independently all came up with the same two cars independently. Stratos, the supercar, because it's just nothing like it.
A
mate of ours down in Cornwall had one that didn't ever seem to work very well, but Clever Jason's was just when we saw it just for Christmas, that was
orangey red. It's like the Dino red. Ugh.
Yeah, just wonderful. The ordinary car would be, and I'd forgotten it was called this at the time. It's called the Renault 5, but the Super Sank. The second generation Renault 5 was called the Super Sank because it was even superer than the first Renault 5. And the Super Sank GT Turbo was kind of my first grown-up car when I started working. So it always has this special, it's kind of, you know, my first Gandini was a Super Sank GT5 Turbo. I'm not going to tell you what the story, because every time one of us tries to describe what the advert is, it does sound like we're writing soft porn. And it just shows how hard it is doing good car adverts. Mm. But I think arriving in a Super Sank, probably a nice plain one.
The silver, unadorned. Dark silver.
Yeah.
They had a silver with a hint of gold in it. It was a little
That lovely Tudor shape with the sort of the door handleless door with a little slider just in behind.
Yeah.
That just, I can feel it now in mine. That and a Stratos. I thought about a Marzal, but it's kind of like too unobtainium. So Stratos is just, and when we all saw those pictures in the Roger Albert Clark rally of Seb Perez caning that Stratos, that noise, just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
God bless him. Rest in peace.
Edward, you've been, haven't you?
Yes, you haven't, Christopher.
So I'm a bit torn by this because I posed this to myself and I'm a bit unresolved. I know the ordinary car isn't an obvious one. It's the 5 Series BMW because my advert, I can't creatively describe how I want it to go, but I really want to tell people how significant this man was. His talents and his influence reached so far beyond what the obvious boundaries were. The E12 5 Series wasn't the Neue Klasse. It was the car after that.
Yeah.
But it had the most obvious Hofmeister kink in the door. It defined 50 years of BMWs. Gandini was the person that penned it. That's outrageous. You know, and on his CV, it's sort of tucked away somewhere.
Mm.
And also, you can get a 535i with an M-stripe on that and that rubber ducktail spoiler. So that's my daily car. The problem with wanting to recreate an advert is you should either go with the very same car in the original, or you should have something completely different. And I look at his list of supercars. You could choose almost any one of them, and they are all cool as you know what. That's the word. They're cool. They're not all obviously beautiful, but they all, you can stand by any one of them and feel immensely proud to own it. But I just think the first single mirror Countach is the best supercar ever made. I can't see how you can have anything else. It's just that green one they have at the museum. Have you been to the museum?
Yeah.
Is that the earliest one? It's a green one.
Yeah.
It might be the most desirable looking motor car on the planet, mightn't it? It just, every time you see it, you think, that looks like a spaceship now. What did that look like?
It's got the chrome. It has the chrome.
It has is it chrome or is it sort of a light grey? It's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. Sensational. Yeah. So I love the idea of trying to tell the story of his influence, really, because the idea that most BMWs owe the way they look to him is not common knowledge. There we go. Boring. I will now move on to the music round. The music round. Okay. Give me a piece of your favourite music. 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, Johnny. Chris Cooper.
This weekend when we were driving around the Cairngorms, I remember them were called the Grampians. Cairngorm National Park is actually quite new. I had my iPhone plugged in. And for some reason, something about my iPhone, when I plug it in, it just decided it's going to dial up Spotify. And every time I started the car, it would play Hero by Nickelback, which was quite sort of anthemic for some of the beautiful vistas and rolling and staggering. And somebody said, we had a beautiful walk on Saturday around parts of the Balmoral Estate, which are all open to the public. Somebody said, if you go to the top of Loch Na Garr, the big mountain in the Balmoral, you can see all the way to Cheviot Hills. I thought that was quite heroic. So Hero by Nickelback.
There we go. Manish.
It's in tribute to Mr. Gandini and that commercial, it would have to be Vivaldi's Spring.
Morse wouldn't like that. Edward.
Now, Neil sent us a video yesterday.
Oh, don't show it.
I'm not going to show it. But clearly you had to set a playlist up for the era of the car. Was that the purpose?
No, it was Radio 2.
Was that just coincidence, was it?
It was coincidence.
That's brilliant.
It wasn't curated.
No, it was Radio 2.
Well, I had to go back to the noughties to look for some dance music. So I've got World Hold On by Bob Sinclair.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Yeah.
Good tune. Neil Clifford.
This week, Matthew, I've been mainly listening to the Pet Shop Boys. I love the Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've heard a song on it before. Anyway, left to my own devices, the Pet Shop Boys.
I probably would.
You know, you always think it's 1990s. They were the 80s. They were so advanced. Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
So I was driving along yesterday and something randomly popped out of my old Apple iTunes thing. I think my, the you know, the connection dies and suddenly the car and the device have a little chat and your old iTunes starts playing. You think,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes it can be a really nice surprise. Sometimes it can shock you. I had a shocking one yesterday. I'm going to admit to it because it was a song I loved in my youth. And I it's absurd. Who remembers that sort of COD gothic rock band called the Sisters of Mercy?
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. Alice.
And This Corrosion came on, which is a sort of poppy rock thing. But it reminded me of being 16 again. And I sang along to it, to This Corrosion with his absurd vocals. So there you go, the Sisters of Mercy, This Corrosion. How old do you feel, Manish? That's the end of episode 57. Oh,
yeah, that's the king of supercars. And that's the
one, isn't it? Look at the curves on it.
It is chrome on the front. You're right, Manish.
Oh, it's pretty
sure. Yeah.
Yes, isn't it, Windows. It's a little Windows. Just genius.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for putting up with us. We're sorry it was uploaded late last week. There was a technical issue. It won't happen again. We appreciate your support and we'll hopefully see you or you'll hear from us again for episode 58 next week. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.